Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
Welcome into Coffee Break this morning. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for joining us. I sure do appreciate that. And the phone lines appear to be cooperating. Though I found out yesterday it wasn't just our phone lines in the studio. It was ours in the building, ours across a vast area. Actually, something went down, and so a lot of people were without phones yesterday. So that wasn't just our problem. I'm glad that other people were suffering with us. But today they're working. And we've got John Finn from the Lewis and Clark Library on the line with us. John, how you doing?
Pretty good, Troy. How are you?
You know, I'm doing okay. I'm really glad that we managed to connect with you today. So I'm doing even better. It's been a little bit of a trying time for you in the library, I know, but you've been able to bring folks back into the building for a little bit now, right? How is everything going?
So we don't actually have people browsing the stacks right now, but we are allowing people to place holds and pick them up curbside.
Mm-hmm. But you're able to go in, right? You and your staff?
Oh, yeah, the staff is there. Yep, okay. We're working hard and occupying our offices and pulling holds and doing a lot of work.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned, I mean, people can still, people can use the library right now. It's just like everything else, I suppose, looks a little bit different.
Absolutely. We are now allowing people to come anywhere near the main library in Helena because it's a big construction site right now. But we do have a branch location that we're calling the Capitol Branch on 11th Avenue.
Okay. Yeah. And that's something we want to talk about today is the sure. branches. I mean, the move, you were going to move some stuff over to that Capitol Branch. I mean, what's the situation there? That's and when we say Capitol Branch, explain to folks where that's at.
So the Capitol Branch is at 1609 11th Avenue. It shares a retail space with Leslie's Hallmark, the Dive Bakery, and Empty Glass. We're between Empty Glass and Leslie's Hallmark.
Okay. So have you moved stuff over into that space now?
We have moved about 15,000 items over there.
Wow.
It's a pretty good collection. We're almost ready to open that for people to browse. We're making those plans right now.
Okay. How long did that take? Because I know initially you had a company that was going to be able to help do that, and then the apocalypse started, and everything yeah. changed.
Yeah, we ended up moving everything ourselves. It took quite a bit of work, mostly setting up the shelves, actually, tearing down shelves at the main library and hauling those over and setting those up. But we have an amazing facilities crew that was able to do that for us.
John Finn with the Lewis and Clark Library is our guest this morning on Coffee Break, and we're talking Capitol Branch. And I guess you said you're hoping to, the plan is to open that soon. Do we have a timeline or?
Yeah, so right now we're offering curbside pickup there. If you place holds, we will negotiate a time with you to come in and pick up your holds. And so we've been doing that there for about 3 weeks, and we have been checking out, you know, couple thousand items a month since we started that. And so that's happening. And starting Monday, the 15th, we're going to return to our traditional holds pickup rather than curbside. If you place a hold on something and you get notified that your hold is available, you can just come in to the Capitol Branch and pick up that hold. We'll be open from 11 until 6, Monday through Saturday, starting the 15th. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to remind folks that, you know, when you're going to be open, that's not at the library that we've come to know and love. This is only at the Capitol Branch where this is happening.
Only at the Capitol Branch, correct.
Okay. Go ahead, John. You're going to add, and I interrupted you, so go ahead and finish.
No, that's okay. Currently, we're doing curbside hold pickup at all of our branches. So if you live in Lincoln or Augusta or East Helena, you can do curbside at those locations as well.
Okay. Yeah, because you have not just the Capitol Branch. I mean, we probably don't mention those other locations enough when you're on the show. I mean, you have branches in all those communities as well, and they have a lot to offer also.
They do. They're just miniature versions of the big library. You know, they do programs, story times. They offer computer use. They're doing everything that we're doing just on a smaller scale.
Okay. And pickup is available at those as well. So all of the branch locations, you can get online, you can ask the library staff to hold your book and then go pick it up.
Correct.
Okay. How is John? How is construction looking at the big library, at the Papa Library? What does it look like?
It's amazing. You know, because there's no patrons there, the construction company, Dick Anderson Construction, is really taking advantage of the opportunity to ramp up their schedule. And we're probably a month ahead of schedule construction-wise. It looks like a full-on construction site, though, inside the building. Everything is pretty much destroyed at this point. In a good way. But if you drive by the library, you can see what's happening. All the new glass is in. It's so much brighter inside the library right now than it was.
Well, it's pretty exciting because, I mean, the library is just, it's going to be amazing when that's all finished. It's going to be really, really nice. Are you starting to see the potential through the work every day? I mean, can you sort of see past the, man, this place is a wreck?
Yeah, absolutely. We walk around and we see, oh, that's where that room is going to be. That's great. And then the new grand staircase up to the second floor is getting framed in right now. And everything's really shaping up, and we can see the vision.
So what is our anticipated opening date? I mean, realizing that construction, it's sort of like grilling, you know, it's done when it's done. Is there an anticipated date, though?
You know, so our original opening date was going to be sometime in September. That was based on construction, receiving furniture, et cetera. Construction looks like it's going to be done in the middle of August, but our furniture is not going to arrive until the beginning of September. So we're still on track for a September opening, just because that furniture includes new shelving.
Okay. And then you're going to have to move all that stuff from the Capitol branch back over, right?
We are, yeah. That's going to be a bit of a problem as well.
Yeah, you're just going to get it settled in over there and go, okay, well, now let's take it all apart again.
Yeah, I think so. The thing, our plan right now is to actually open all of the branches to foot traffic, people coming into the library to browse the collections, on June 22nd.
Okay, so that's coming really soon.
That's really soon. So that will give us really like 2 full months of people being able to use the branch at the Capitol branch before we start moving stuff back.
Oh, okay, great. We're talking with John Finn from the Lewis and Clark Library. And as he was just saying, the branches are looking to open up here. I know you've been working to figure out how you can open, how you can do so safely. What have those discussions been like? Because, you know, we talk about cleaning and safety measures in different businesses. You know, a restaurant, they're using paper menus that are disposable. You don't have that option in a library. People are walking around everywhere and they're touching everything. That's just how it's built.
Yeah, so we're going to require people to social distance, of course. We're going to limit the number of people in the library at any given time to browse. We're going to require masks. So if you come to the library and you don't have a mask, we will provide one for you. We will have hand sanitizer stations set up. And we will ask that if you touch a book, please check it out. Don't put it back on the shelf. And we will, if you don't want to check it out, we'll provide a place to put it and we will quarantine it.
Okay.
But that's what we're doing. We're quarantining items for 72 hours.
Okay, and that's how it works when people are dropping stuff off as well, right? When they're done with their books and they drop them back?
Yes, exactly. We take them out of the book drop, we set them aside, and wait 72 hours, and then we check them in.
Okay. We're talking with John Finn from the Lewis and Clark Library this morning. And right now, John, I mean, we're talking future, but right now, what is available for folks? I know we've talked about that with you on the show before, but in case folks have missed it, I mean, what can they get from the library right now? I guess going through the website or calling, they can call as well, right?
Yeah, they can call as well, 447-1690. That will allow you to talk to a librarian who can put something on hold for you, negotiate a time to pick things up. We have all kinds of downloadable audiobooks and ebooks and media available on our website, and that's lclibrary.org, and all kinds of research databases. We have a temporary free in-home access to ancestry.com, all kinds of fun stuff on our website right now.
Yeah, the website is really, really good. It's a fantastic website, very easy to navigate. And I do want to mention the bookmobile is going to be starting up again soon as well, right? I mean, that's almost another branch.
It is a branch of our library system, and it is already up and running, actually. We started about 2 weeks ago making deliveries to our fixed locations, like our nursing homes and assisted living facilities. And we just started ramping up some of our traditional stops around town at parks and some of the country stores. And we are allowing curbside pickup. So if you place a hold on something and have the bookmobile set as your pickup location, you can just show up and your hold will be available on a table outside of the bookmobile.
Okay. Is there a schedule online for when and where that's going to be?
Yep, it's right on our front homepage.
Okay. But yeah, lots still available online at the Lewis and Clark Library. I mean, and I'm sure there's still patrons who just aren't able, or maybe feel like it's not safe for them to be out just yet if they're in one of the more at-risk groups. So even after you open the locations, I'm assuming that you're still going to make stuff like curbside pickup available for people that need or want it.
Absolutely. Curbside will be available at all of the branches in addition to traditional holds pickup. If somebody's uncomfortable, we'll figure out a way to make that work for them.
Okay. And before I let you go, John, I do want to ask about the summer reading program. That just got up and going too, didn't it?
It did. And we're doing that completely online. And we have some packets available right now at the branches for kids to pick up to guide them through the summer continuing to read.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great program. We, of course, just finished our Read to Ride program, and so many kids in the community participated in that. What was it, like 500,000 minutes that they registered reading for that thing? Really, really neat. So now they can just transition from that into the summer reading program. And this, as you said, it's all online this year.
It is, yes. We're doing it through our website and through an app that we have called Beanstack.
Okay. Anything else coming up that we need to know about at the library?
No, you know, we're just making plans for when we're able to see our patrons again. And really, Troy, I can't wait till I can sit in your studio and we don't have to do this on the phone. We're just all looking forward to healthier times.
Yeah, I think I think that's coming. I feel like we're almost there. So hopefully we'll be able to have you and have other folks here in the studio very, very soon. And we're not going to have to play roulette with the phone lines. John Finn,
there you go.
With the Lewis and Clark Library. John, thanks for taking some time. And thanks for all the work that you're doing to help get the library and all the branches and everything up and running. I know it's a lot of work, so I appreciate all the time you're putting into it.
Thanks, Troy.
Stick around. We've got more Coffee Break coming up right after this. I just wanted to step away from the show for a few seconds to tell you that if you miss an episode, you can always catch up. We're on iTunes, so find our show there or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Local and area events, city, state, and national officials, your neighbors doing incredible things. We talk to them all on Coffee Break, where Helena comes to talk.
In today's always-on world, your business demands a simpler approach to network security. At Blackfoot Communications, we deliver state-of-the-art security solutions, from the perimeter to endpoint devices and remote data backup, for businesses across Montana. Ensure your company's network is online all the time. For more information, visit goblackfoot.com/security.
Welcome back in. This is Coffee Break. I'm Troy Shockley. Thanks for sticking around with us this morning. And we're finishing the show chatting with Joe Konauer. He's with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. Joe, how are you doing this morning?
Good. Great. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing really well. I appreciate you taking time to chat with us. And we had John a little while ago, and we talked about this banquet that was going to be coming up and got pushed back a bit. And now we've got another pushback, don't we?
Yeah, we're going to punt again. You know, our original banquet was May 2nd, and then we rescheduled to June 18th, thinking, you know, we're going to probably try to get into phase 3, and we're only into phase 2, which allows us 50 people. Well, it's not economically viable to have a banquet with 50 people, and it's not very fun. So we're going to kick it down the road to October 3rd this year. So Hopefully by that time we're into phase three or beyond. And I think we'll have a good time then.
Yeah. So anyone who has their tickets, I think safe assumption that those are still good for the new date.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So got to be frustrating, I know, to keep sliding it. But how are ticket numbers with the change? I mean, are people kind of rolling with the punches here?
You know, people are really, really great about this. You know, they understand the situation we're in. I've talked to a lot of people out on the street, and they see me and come and talk to me about it. And they're very supportive of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and supportive of what we do. So, you know, it's a great organization, as I've said before. And, you know, people are buying tickets right now. The tickets are on sale for the October banquet as we speak.
So when we talk Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, this a national organization made up of a lot of local groups, right? I mean, I think people hear Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and they think, well, this is just a big thing. Well, it is a big thing, but there's local boots on the ground as well.
Well, there really is. The RMEF actually has about 20 fundraising chapters in the state of Montana. They have 14,000 members and probably about 2,000 or 3,000 volunteers. And the volunteers put on the banquet to raise the money, and the members are members of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. There's about, probably a 250,000 people in the United States that are members of the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. It's growing every day. There's over 500 chapters in the United States. And so it does a great thing for Montana. It does a great thing for, you know, elk. And if you like being outside, it's a great thing.
Yeah. Joe Konauer talking Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation with us this morning. And in our area, of course, there's an incredible amount of elk habitat. Pretty light winter. Our numbers should be pretty solid this year, I would imagine.
You know, it has been. With an open winter like this, we have what they do call recruitment. And recruitment is a number of calves coming into it. And so it's just been a great year for them. You know, the last 2 years, the recruitment's been down. And you probably see it in the numbers. You're going to see, you know, less spikes and less yearling cows out there on the ground. But this year, hopefully, we're going to see a large number of calves replace them. And that's just, it's a cyclic thing. You know, it's Mother Nature. That's mm-hmm. how she works. And some years you have great years and some years you don't.
Yeah. When we talk about chronic wasting disease, you know, we haven't heard a lot about that lately, which is a good thing. But it does seem that when that pops up, we're seeing it in deer, not in the elk, not in the moose, though it can across those species, it can impact both of them. Have we been seeing this in elk here in Montana, or is it right now seeming to be just in the deer?
Well, CWD is predominantly in deer. The main transmitter is the mule deer, but we will see it in elk. They've seen it in one wild elk, and they've seen it in one captive elk in the state of Montana. The surrounding states, they see it a lot in elk. They have larger populations, and it's not so much the density, it's the prevalence of that disease. As we're seeing with the COVID-19, it's the prevalence of the disease. The more people you have it, the more it gets. The thing about CWD versus COVID-19 is that CWD is fatal, period, 100%. And there's no walking away from it. Once you have it, it infects you and you die. And worst thing about it is that you shed the prions that cause the CWD right away. Once you start getting it, it gets into your glands, it gets into your mouth, and it gets in your saliva glands. The animals that get it when they go to drink, when they go to eat, when they go to salt blocks, they shed it. And so the next animal comes along and grazes or licks that salt block or whatever, picks those prions up and then get infected. And that's how infectious it is.
Yeah, which is why there's a big concern in, you know, in Wyoming. They've got sort of those wintering grounds for the, you know, they feed their elk. That's obviously just a breeding ground for CWD, isn't it?
It really is. And the thing about that is that for some reason, it hasn't got into the feeding grounds. It's got all the way around it, but it hasn't got into those feeding grounds, which is just absolutely amazing. They have populations of deer that, the populations of deer are down 40% and 50% from CWD, but the elk have not transmitted it into their populations in large enough numbers to notice it on the feeding grounds. But when it does, it's going to be huge because mm-hmm. a lot of them come off those feeding grounds and go right up through Yellowstone or go around Yellowstone and come into Montana.
So is there talk in the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation about what to do in terms of this? I mean, because right now, it sounds like here in Montana, we've got a lead on this thing, and you don't want to sort of be reactive. That you would think you'd want to be proactive. I mean, is there anything being talked about? Are there measures that we can take here, or is this just a cross your fingers and wait?
Well, it's unfortunately, in Wyoming, the feeding grounds no longer follow the science. They follow the politics. The state of Wyoming, the state of Wyoming have been operating these feeding grounds for so long that they have a patent on their food, the elk chow. So what they do is they buy $1 million worth of feed from the local ranchers, which is huge economic boost. Mm-hmm. They produce these pellets in which they feed out in the feed grounds. They don't feed hay anymore like they used to. They have these pellets. And so it's a huge economic boost. The ranchers around there say, you know what, we got to keep these feed grounds open because it pulls the elk off of my winter pasture. And I don't want those elk commingling with my cows and eating my winter feed. And the other thing is a lot of the outfitters down there say, you know what, you bring these elk down here and my clients have an opportunity to go hunt them. And if you don't, if you quit feeding them, if you think about that, you know, all those 30,000 animals down there to go to the feed grounds. You quit feeding them on a bad winter, not so much this winter, but think about last winter when in February and March when it was like 30 below. You know, you're going to have a huge die-off of animals. People don't like seeing that. And so it is a situation where they're trying to solve it through politics versus science.
Joe Konauer is our guest this morning. He's with the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And I cut you off there. Joe, go ahead.
So they have recognized the feed grounds as being a problem clear back in the 80s. About every 10 years, they get a citizens group together and try to make recommendations, try to figure it out. And they always come to the same conclusion. Let's close it down. And the political thing about that, you know, the economics and the draw, the tourists because of the National Elk Refuge down there, they don't have the guts to do it. They just don't have that ability to do that. So it's unfortunate.
Yeah. Something else, and we've got about 3-ish minutes left, and something else we talk about here in Montana, really all over the West, is public access. And this is something that the RMEF also focused on, is getting more access to more land. How does that happen? I know I'm only giving you a couple minutes here, but what's the process for that?
You know, originally Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation was thinking, you know, let's go up and buy the access, buy the property. And in the last couple of years, they've said, you know what, let's be more strategic about this and look at different properties. It's like the Falls Creek purchase up by Shoto. Mm-hmm. You know, we bought 442 acres, but it gave us access to 27,000 acres behind that. That's big bang for the buck. And so they started leveraging their money, going, you know what, let's just don't look at what we're going to buy. Let's look at what we're going to get also. And so they're being smart about this. Falls Creek, you know, got access to 27,000 acres. The 10-foot property out there out by White Sulphur Springs gave us access to 9,300 acres. The Bear Mouth, which an individual just walked into RMF headquarters one day and said, hey, you know, I have this, all this land up by Bear Mouth, which is on the way to Missoula on the right, on the north side of the highway, 3,450 acres. I'm just going to sign it off to Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And it's interspersed with, it's got great elk habitat. It's interspersed with a lot of FWP property up there. Gave us access to another 5,200 acres. The Green Mountain was a 620-acre purchase. Gave us access to another 2,000 acres. And so I can go on and on and on with all these projects, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation. And this is what we have these banquets, fundraising banquets for, is to be able to purchase this access.
And yeah, so, I mean, and just recently, I know there have been projects around, Anaconda Express to expand some access there and work around Bozeman. I guess that would be in the Bridger Mountains in that area. You've done lots of work in Jefferson County, Broadwater. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you sit down and look at all the projects it's not just a project a year of, okay, well, this is the one on the list this year, let's get this. It's all over the place.
It really is. And if you look at the report, I'm just looking at the report. They just sent it out, 2019 completed projects. We got access to 76,000, almost 77,000 acres on a total cost of $14 million. That's what RMEF just spent in Montana last year. We protected 6,388 acres and gained access to 47,000 acres. And so, you know, there's a monetary value for that, just an intrinsic value of, I don't have a large ranch, but I know that I can go down to the Crazy Mountains and the Porcupine area and be able to hike it. I can go to the Swan Range and be able to hike it now where I couldn't before. Doe Mountain, which you just talked about, and Mount Hagen, also down there. You know, it gives us access to this. And one thing about real estate, there's only so much.
Mm-hmm. This is opening it up not just to elk hunters. I mean, it's opening up access to people that want to go fishing. To want to go, like you said, go hiking. I mean, this is opening it up to all of Montana. So the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation doing work not just for the elk hunters among us. They're doing work for Montana. And it's very, very good organization. It's one that deserves support for anybody that appreciates outdoors and access to public lands and wildlife habitat. We're in our final about 30 seconds here, Joe. Can you give people, where do they go if they want to find out more information about the banquet, about Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, whatever it is?
So if you want to learn about our banquet, just go to rmef.org. Click on events. It'll talk about our banquet. You can call me. I'm in the phone book. Or if you want a ticket, you can call Jess at 461-5721 or email her at rmef.elkhorn@gmail.com.
Okay.
We have tickets available.
Yeah, and you've got time because now it's going to be in October. So, Joe, thanks for taking time today. I sure appreciate you.
Thanks, Troy. Greatly appreciate it.
That's all the time we got. We'll see you back here tomorrow. I'm Troy Shockley, and that's it for Coffee Break today. Be sure to check us out on iTunes. Head on over. Give us a review there. That's always much appreciated. Or swing by coffeebreak959.podbean.com. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you back here tomorrow.